All right. Hey, welcome to Kingdom Refresh. We're back again talking about Matthew 5, 33 through 37. If you missed the message, you can go back and check it out. Beware, there are a few glitches in it. We're hopefully trying to figure that out. But we're just going to kind of unpack a few questions that I've kind of come up with about this topic, and we'll just kind of chat and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. And the winner of best comment gets this baby right here. This little baby.
I don't know if you'd be happy with that.
No. You'd bring her back.
Yeah.
She's her favorite word is no right now. What's your favorite word?
Nothing.
Nothing.
So I just want to, you know, start talking about just some easy stuff, and then you know, we can talk about some other things. But you know, how can we cultivate a habit of always speaking the truth in our daily interactions?
Yeah, you know, it says in Luke, I think it's Luke 6:24. Don't quote me on that. It's the heart speaks with the mouth, or the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. You have to fill your heart with truth to speak truth. You can't seat other things on your heart. Like we talked about, you know, if there's a lot of shame on your heart, it's going to outflow lies. If there's a lot of pride on your heart, it's going to outflow lies. If there's a lot of insecurities that you're still carrying with you, you're going to lie to cover up those things, right? But if it's truth, like the God of the universe cared enough for me to die for my sins and reconcile me to him, and my purpose is to glorify him and make much of him instead of building my own persona, my own reputation, but I'm here to glorify him in all that I do, then I'm going to want to speak truth. You know, I'm going to want to tell the world all the things that the Lord has done for me. And so, you know, I've hidden your word in my heart that I might not sin against you. That's quite literally true for anything we want to do. All the stuff we've been talking about, you're not going to want to lust if your heart is full of contentment for what God has given you. You're not going to want to lie if you are secure in who God has made you. You're not going to covet if you are keeping your eyes on the author and perfecter of your faith. You're not looking around at what you don't have because of the riches that you do have. So it's really a matter of like a funnel. You feed the funnel with prayer, worship, and study. Oh, here you go. Sure. And then that outflows truth.
Yeah. And I think, kind of on that point, I think a lot of times it is the insecurity that causes us to lie, because we don't feel like, you know, whether we don't feel like our story is powerful enough, or we don't feel like, you know, the things in our lives are good enough to be. Mm-hmm. But I think part of that, and we've talked about it, you know, it's that idea of transparency, like being okay with that my life is just fine right now. Or, you know, I know a topic that comes up a lot is that, like, my story is not powerful enough, you know, like I haven't gone through enough stuff. My story mm-hmm. is boring. Mm-hmm. And the story of redemption is not boring. No matter how far you came, it's still a story that needs to be told. So I think that insecurity is a lot of, kind of where those untruths come out of, because you just feel like I'm not good enough to mm-hmm. to tell the truth, to, mm-hmm. to, you know.
All of our testimony is the same. We're testifying to Christ and him crucified and raised from the dead. That's what matters. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, the varying levels of sin in your life isn't as important as it is to know the great level of grace in your life. And that's really what matters.
What are some common situations where people might feel tempted to swear or make oaths, and how can we address these without compromising our integrity? I think we have touched on this a little bit. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I think one of the biggest situations where we're tempted to swear and make oaths is when we say, I'm going to pray for you.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
Like there are people in our church that I know that when they say that, I'm going on their list.
Yes.
And I will be prayed for.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's become a Christian, you know, like phrase where it's just like, well, I'm going to pray. I'll pray for you. And does that mean it happens? You know, I think that that's probably one of the biggest, like swears or oaths we make.
That's so right, man. In James, it warns, and we're going to go to James next because it borrows a lot and it kind of expounds on a lot of the teachings that we're learning right now. But in James, he warns people of false piety. So basically, like, you religious leaders, you walk around the squares and you say, be warm and filled, be warm and filled, be warm and filled, but you do nothing to warm people and fill them, is basically what he's saying. Yeah. He's like, it's just empty words. Same as, hey, I'm praying for you. It's like, instead of saying, hey, I'm going to pray for you, maybe, and I'm bad at this and I need to get better at this, stop and say, let's pray right now.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to forget and I don't want to be made a liar. I want to pray for you right now. One time, I was working on a message at my former church and our youth pastor came in and he's like, hey man, how's it going? It's like 2 PM. I was like, just busy. Got worship and message and all this kind of stuff, getting ready for Sunday. And he's like, wow, have you had lunch? And I said, no. He goes, oh man, hey, I'll pray for you. I know that's really hard. I know what that's like. I got up and went to the bathroom, and within that time, I came back and there was a thing of sushi sitting on my desk. And I was like, that's perfect. This is the greatest example of what James is warning about and what Christ is warning about. Like, don't just say, I'll pray for you. Be the answer to the prayer. Hmm. I didn't get to eat. Instead of him going, well, hopefully he gets to eat soon, he goes, no, I'm going to make sure that he eats. And he brought that food to me. And that blessed me tremendously because it humbled me and it taught me that, yeah, he didn't just have to say the words. He did the actions and made himself a truthful person.
Yeah. And I think that's, I think that's important. You know, cause a lot of times we forget that we're the ones that, you know, sometimes when things are being laid on our heart or people ask us, like, we're the ones that should be taking the action. Mm-hmm. You know, the person that God is calling to do that is you.
Yes.
Most of the time it's like, oh yeah, I'll pray that somebody will do that. It's like, well, yeah, but it's you.
you're the answer. You're the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the adverse of the guy that's drowning and he goes, God save me. And then a boat comes by and he goes, get in. He goes, no, God's going to save me.
Yeah.
And then a plane comes by and puts a ladder out and he goes, no, God's going to save me. And he gets to heaven. And he goes, why didn't you save me?
I sent a boat.
I sent a boat and a plane, you know?
Yeah. I keep praying for God to let me win the lottery. And the whole time he's like, buy a ticket.
Yeah. Hey, can you say hi? Can you say Brandon?
Okay. Why is it important to let our yes be yes and our no be no, and what are the consequences of failing to do so?
It says in scripture that God has given us his oath and these things are unchangeable because God cannot lie. When God says something, it's going to come to pass, and us as representatives of the kingdom need to do likewise, you know. One of the big things in the Greek culture and ancient culture in general, Roman culture, basically, I don't know if you remember the show Judge Judy or The People's Court or something like that. We've heard the term bema seat, which is the judgment seat. And we think of it as like a holy high place, but the bema seat was basically the town square, center of the town square. And people would come and listen to lawsuits and what are you doing? Lawsuits and judgments. We're going to get into this a little bit, but later. But they would listen to lawsuits and judgment as a form of entertainment because they like to see people argue. And Jesus's last prayer for his people before he went to the cross was, "Lord, let them be unified. Father, let them be unified. You know, as I am in you, let them be in me. Not having any division." And the culture of swearing on heaven, on Jerusalem, on my head, on, you gotta you talk or what, on whatever, that culture was built around varying levels of trustworthiness, you know, in the culture. And then once you get before the bema seat, which is the judge, you presumably are at the highest level of truthfulness, because otherwise you might be put to death if you're lying, right? But Christ is the ultimate judge. And he's like, you know, just be right before my throne. You know, I've made you right through the bloodshed on the cross. Be right before my throne. You know, if you're kingdom citizens, if you are kingdom people, you should mirror and reflect the attitude of the king. I say yes, I mean yes, I will never go back on it, so you should do likewise.
Right? Yeah, and I think that goes along with kind of what we're talking about, because what it becomes is, you know, when you make a statement and say, I will do this, and then you don't, eventually they don't ask.
Mm.
Like, it comes to a point where, like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to ask you because you haven't followed through the rest of the times.
You lose your usefulness to society and to the kingdom after a while, right?
Mm-hmm.
You probably have a lot to give. I have a hard time with this because I really, really want to be seen as a person that does what they say. But as an external processor, sometimes I'll just say things and then people go, oh, well, didn't you say it? I'm like, I did say that. I was just thinking out loud. I wasn't really committing to it, but because I said it, I'll do it, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, can you come and speak at this thing and do this? Sure. Oh, I'm supposed to have dinner with my family that night. Well, I guess I'll miss that because I said yes. So it could get you into a tight spot too. Yeah. It can make your life a little bit more complicated than it needs to be. If you're saying yes and you're being held to that yes, sometimes it's better to defer the yes or defer the no, not to be noncommittal, but to ensure that you're going to follow through with your word. Some people are yes people. They're just like yes to everything. Well, after a while, you're going to start letting people down. You're going to start backing out of your word, not because you meant to, not because you were trying to lie, but because circumstantially you weren't managing your time well, or you weren't managing or mitigating your resources.
Well, and I know that's a big issue too. Just like, I mean, just saying yes. I mean, I've struggled with that just because it's, you know, it's always, well, I guess, you know, I have the skill or whatever to do it. So yeah, sure, I'll do it.
Yeah.
But then it becomes overwhelming when, you know, too many things are stacked on top of each other, that you then start dropping the ball and you become the person that doesn't do what he says because, you know, you've overwhelmed yourself.
Yeah.
How can
this
we...
This is real life right now, by the way. This is how it is. My wife is in Arkansas visiting a church plant that our friend did, and she wanted to go and be there and visit her friends and stuff and just kind of see their church. And so I said yes. And see, this is a prime example of saying yes to something and then realizing, uh-oh, I better come through with my word, even at the expense of a little munchkin being on the podcast. So whatever.
Doesn't bug me. How can we ensure that our words consistently reflect our true intentions and commitments? How can we ensure that our words consistently reflect our true intentions and commitments?
Yeah, that's a heart issue, isn't it? That's a wanting to, I think it starts with prayer, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Filling yourself up so that you can outpour the thing that you're supposed to.
Yeah.
Where are you going?
Well, and it doesn't have to be, there's rarely ever a situation where an immediate yes is necessary or an immediate no is necessary. There are things that you can do. I mean, we have some people in our church that, like, they very much will say, let me pray on it. And they mean that, you know? And I feel like a lot of times, especially this is a Midwest thing, you know, when you say, I think about it, or I'll think about it, that usually means no. You know, like,
you just, you're like, non-committal.
You're like, yeah, I'll think about it. Okay, that means no. But I think that it takes, you know, kind of thinking about not necessarily giving a hard yes or no immediately, but saying, you know, let me think on it. Let me make sure, you know, I feel like my thing has become, let me talk to my wife.
Oh yeah.
You know, cause it's like, yeah, I don't necessarily know if I can like,
yes,
you know?
Yeah. She's the keeper of the calendar, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing how women in general just are good at that. My calendar is in my head most of the time. Until I got here, I kept a pretty loose calendar, and then I started getting all these meetings and stuff. I had to really, like, really start the calendar.
Yeah. So this kind of follows in. What are some ways that we can practice being more mindful and deliberate about the promises we make to others? So I think that a prayer is a good solution to that. Waiting is a good solution to that. Just not allowing yourself to, you know, I can't remember what the rule is, but it's like, you know, you go to, it's for like impulse purchases. Like you go to Walmart, you see something, you're like, oh man, I really want that cool new Lego set.
For sure.
Or a new Star Wars toy or Batman toy. And then you're like, okay, let me think about it. And if I still want it in 24 hours, then I can get it.
Am I the only one that walks through Walmart or Best Buy or whatever and sees a TV deal and immediately has the impulse to buy a TV, even though I have too many TVs? For whatever reason, I don't know.
Well, it's a great deal.
Well, and like when they first came out, they were like thousands of dollars, and so we got that in our head. And so I see like a 100-inch flat screen for like $500 or whatever.
And you're like, whoa!
I'm like, I can't afford not to buy this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Well, now you have like 8K and things like that are the big price. But I mean, it's like that with everything. I know like Kohl's is that way. You go to Kohl's and then it's like, yeah, I got Kohl's cash. I have to go spend it.
Oh my,
it's like,
Kohl's cash.
Yeah, but the Kohl's cash is like, so you're going to go spend $100 more than you planned on because you have $20 in Kohl's cash.
You're not saving money.
Yeah.
You're spending more money.
What is
to
that?
Spend
girl, girl math is what they keep
they call
calling
it. Girl
it.
Math. Yeah. My wife hates that though. She's like, no, I keep it at, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. How does consistently speaking the truth build trust and strengthen relationships?
Yeah, we all, I think if you were to think right now, who's the most trustworthy person in my life? Everybody can name at least one person. And you can see how they got there in your life. There's just those people that are, you tell them something that's like, you know, if you want people to lean in, you go, hey, I got something important to tell you, but you can't tell anyone. And they're like, that all ears. If you want somebody to pay attention,
yeah,
just lead with that. Because people, I got something to tell you, but it's very important. It's very controversial. Confidential. I just put controversial and confidential together.
Controversial.
Controversial. Yeah.
Put that on Urban Dictionary. I think it's just the consistency of being the person that tells the truth. That's how you build trust. And if you continue to do it, then you build a rapport and I don't know what you call it. Like basically like you then have a trait that is, oh, they're a truth teller or I've never really heard them say anything that wasn't correct or
yep,
like was false.
Yeah, when people come through every time, mm-hmm, you can trust what they say is gonna happen.
Yeah, well, it's
but not abuse that either.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, this guy will do anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, okay. There's certain people that I know will do anything for me, but I'm very like selective in mm-hmm what I ask them to do, not because I'm afraid they won't do it, but because I respect them so much and their time so much. What? Well, you don't do anything I ask you to do.
What do you mean?
Can you say no? Okay.
Yeah. You know, we all, like, I feel like we all have that person that we know that we can call them when we have an issue and they will show up, you know, that. And I feel like that's the level of kind of what we're talking about with the truth stuff. Like, if there are people that you know will be consistent.
Oh, yeah.
In every circumstance.
For sure.
What are some practical steps we can take to avoid exaggerating or deceit in our communication?
Yeah, that's definitely dealing with pride, I think. You know, I kind of need that.
Pride.
I need that. I'm trying to talk into this. You want to say something? This is important.
Is this just all about you?
Huh? What if somebody doesn't get saved today because you pushed the mic away and I said, And if you don't hear anything else today, make sure you hear that. See what you're doing? Eternal souls rest in the balance, Olivia. Anyway, yeah, it's, you really got to deal with pride, because I think my biggest impulse to lie is when I'm feeling less than, you know. Mm-hmm. My biggest impulse to lie is, like you said, to exaggerate something. Like, I hard flipped the 10 set of stairs when I only hard flipped the 3 set of stairs. Or, you know, parents do this too. It's like, yeah, my my kids were reading at 4 months old. You know, it's like, no, they weren't.
Yeah, or the fish was this big.
Mm-hmm. It got bigger and bigger.
It was a tiny minnow.
Olivia here is solving quadratic equations.
Yeah.
She's just shy. That's why she won't do it right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it just, it comes with practice and being... But again, I think that the practical steps is also saying, like, let me let you know, things like that, to where we're not constantly leaving false promises.
Yep. Yep. I see this in the church world too. I call it evangelistic numbers, where we'll be like, as pastors especially, like, how big is your church? Oh, I didn't count, but I would 4,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
That's funny. I mean, there's only 400 chairs.
We had 53 people get baptized.
Yes. Yeah.
This Sunday.
I mean, it was a lot. I didn't count, you know, or whatever. It's just to try to build your reputation or something like that. It's just, it's so silly.
How can we handle situations where we realize we have unintentionally misled someone or failed to keep our word?
That's that restorative process, I think.
Yeah. I feel like humility is the first step, really. I mean, humility to realize that, you know, I've gone too far, or I can't do this, or I falsified something.
Mm-hmm.
And then the recognition to say, I need to make amends, which, I mean, we talked about, reconciliation, a couple weeks ago.
You want my attention?
We talked about reconciliation a couple weeks ago, and, you know, the idea is that it's our job to kind of make those amends and make that to reconcile with our brothers and sisters. I thought you were trying to pull your hair.
Yeah, reconciliation is important. I mean, it's like, even when you don't intend to sin against your brother, you still need to go and ask for forgiveness. It's not like there's sins of commission and then sins of omission.
Yeah.
And sometimes that falls. What are you doing? You're about to commit. You're about to make me commit dad anger.
I think too that it's also better to handle these situations, like, especially when we've failed to keep our word, handle them before we fail to keep our word. You know, to come to them and say, "Hey, I just can't do it. Like, I do not have the time." Mm-hmm. And maybe even have suggestions of who else you could ask or things like that, but to not allow it to get to the point where it becomes a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And then having grace for those that do that too, not being so angry.
Yeah.
So I was doing a special Sunday night service, my last church, and for the final summer night that we were doing, I was like, I'm going to get this really big Christian artist that's a friend of mine. I'm not going to say who it is because I want to throw him under the bus. And so texted him. I was like, hey, can you do this? And he's like, yeah, I could do that. I'm like, sweet. He's like, don't announce it, though, because, like, I have some radius clauses. But, you know, we could make it, like, a special thing. You can surprise everybody. So I got up, and I was like, yeah, so for this final night, we're going to have a really great artist. I can't say his name. And then I started humming some of his songs and stuff like that. I was like, I'm not allowed to say his name. Kind of looks like me, blah, blah, blah. You know, all the stuff. And everybody's like getting excited. And so people show up. Well, it turns out he couldn't be there. Right. Mm. So there's two things that happened there. He committed lightly. And I stretched the bounds of truth or stretched the bounds of my word because I said, oh, yeah, I won't announce it, but I kind of did, you know? And so, it was like two wrongs don't make a right, for sure. And so I ended up playing it off like, I never said that. I was like, I said maybe or whatever, but it made me look kind of foolish.
Yeah.
And so that could, you know, it's not just you sometimes when you say you'll do something and you don't do it, there's ramifications down the line. It could have a domino effect and it could cause others to fall into a really rough spot. So it's just good to be upfront.
So how does the ongoing effort to combat misinformation and promote truthfulness in social media and news reporting align with the teachings of Matthew 5 regarding like honesty, integrity, and one's words? I feel like, I mean, this is a huge topic, obviously, because especially, I mean, it's Anchorman really that, you know, you see the, it's like the 24-hour news cycle, Anchorman 2.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, he's driving the car. He's got a knife. You know, like a lot of it is assumptions. And you always, you know, especially when there's a large tragic event or something like that, where there's, you know, people that do end up passing away, you know, it's always like, we have 15 reported dead, and then it comes back sometimes and it's like, oh, there was actually 3 and 1 person that went to the hospital.
Yeah.
You know, because what they're doing is they're seeking as much information as they possibly can from sources that aren't necessarily correct.
And it keeps people glued to the table. I remember during COVID, there was like the ticker at the bottom of how many people have died so far. How was that helping anybody? It was just fear. And then later on, I mean, this never was reported, but then they started adjusting those numbers to be more truthful, but you don't get the truth. You only get the sensationalism, right? Yeah. And so then you cause other people to go out and start spreading all this non-truth when you could have just waited just a little bit. Philippians 4:8 says, you know, whatever's true, whatever's honorable, whatever's praiseworthy as a whole list, you know, dwell on those things. If you're dwelling on those things, and how do you know what's true? Well, if you don't know it's true, then you can't put your stamp of truth on it, right? If you're like, well, I heard, I don't know if this is true or not. Well, then probably not a good mode of operation to like just post it or put it out there. I think it's funny that, I know. I think it's funny that the guy that basically brought the term fake news into the limelight and into the cultural zeitgeist was the most hyperbolic president we've ever had. He's like, it's huge. It's going to be great. That's fake news. But you know, it's like, you know, it's like, how was your breakfast today? It was amazing. It's the greatest breakfast we've ever had. You know, everybody can do a Trump impression. It's pretty
a double cheeseburger with a Diet Coke.
It's a double cheeseburger. It might as well have been a triple cheeseburger. It's how great it was. The way I ate it made it seem like a quadruple cheeseburger, you know, but I, you know, it, there's that bit of exaggeration and sensationalism that we want to promote, you know, especially when we're tied to like a sort of tribalism. When we start finding our belonging in political things, when we find our belonging in social causes, when we find our belonging in even as small as like a fandom, you know, like I'll argue with somebody about Batman online and I'll get all worked up. I'm like, this isn't even real life, dude.
Yeah.
Like, what is, like, this isn't true. This isn't honorable. This isn't praiseworthy. Let's dwell on the things that are, you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, having a little bit of fun and social discourse and public discourse is important too, but yeah. Just dwell on those things. And if you don't know if it's true, you know, what is it? It's better to remain silent than to be thought a fool than to open your mouth. Sorry. So better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we're so quick to speak, you know, another James quote, you know, let us be slow to speak and quick to hear and slow to anger as well. And I think if we are slow to speak, we will be slow to anger if we're quick to hear. And that's just not just hearing, like, waiting for my turn to talk. That was good. Waiting for my turn to talk. It's actually understanding and taking in what other people have said. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, and I think, like, Instagram is the world of, like, sensational, you know. I mean, it probably not as much now, but, like, especially if you're an influencer, you know, the idea is to be your best at all times. You know, so it's And I think that that's caused a lot of issues, specifically in the younger generation, you know, like our generation, but like probably, you know, Gen Z, you know, seeing these things, they expect that that's what their life should look like.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's this sensationalized world, and then it causes things like depression and things like that, because you can't achieve that, you know, you can't become that. And so I think when we have that idea of like, this is what your life should look like, it can become a very strong thing to kind of pull you down and be like, well, I think that it can be that way in church too, because, you know, you see somebody that you're like, man, they are just so strong spiritually. And you're like, I feel like I haven't heard from God in years, you know? And so you're like, why am I failing?
Yeah.
What is my problem? And so it just like, especially I think from the perspective of us allowing ourselves to fall into sensationalism, you know, we can become so bogged down about what we're seeing and about ourselves, and you know, it kind of becomes that insecurity, which then I feel like then causes us to be less truthful as well, you know, like we're like, okay, well, I should be this way, so I'm gonna lie and say that I'm, or honestly, you know, we talked about that. One of the biggest lies we say is I'm okay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like,
you know, I respect one of our elders. Every time I ask him, how you doing? He goes, I'm not bad. You know, he actually literally will answer the question the way you've asked it.
Yeah.
Or today I'm doing okay. Like, in a way, I don't want to throw him under the bus. I won't say who it is, but in a way that is like so truthful that I'm like, I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're like, you know, having a hard time, but you know, it's so refreshing to see that, because then I can know how to interact with him a little bit more. Do I have to, you know, pray for him or whatever? I love it.
Well, and I think a lot of it too is it's this idea that we don't want to be a burden, so we don't share what our real,
excuse me,
you know, we don't share what our real insecurities are or our real problems.
Can't get down.
And so it just becomes this world of, you know, we create this basically fake persona of ourselves to try to impress. And all that's doing is almost putting a facade between kind of us and God almost. And I don't know if we necessarily look at it that way.
Sure.
But that's basically what it does. Like, you're creating this wall of, well, this is who I am, but who you are should be who you are in Christ. Should be the same.
Oh, definitely. What do you want? You want to say something? You want to go get lunch?
Now I'm embarrassed.
You want to get a snack?
Oh, snack.
Do you want to? I don't know what you want to do. Speaking of hyperbolic, I am not being hyperbolic when I say tomorrow at church is a day you won't want to miss. We're celebrating what is called Pentecost, which is basically the birthday of the Christian church. It's when the Spirit fell like tongues of fire on all the disciples. Some people think it was just the apostles, but there were 120 there, all gathered together. And the Spirit fell. And we sing that song, King of Kings, the Church of Christ was born, and the Spirit lit the flame.
Yeah.
This is what that's talking about. The Spirit lit the flame. Excuse me. I'm trying to talk. Anyway, so you won't want to miss it. We got some special stuff planned. It is Senior Quilt Sunday, so if you have a senior has been a part of this church, we're going to celebrate them and what the Lord has for them, pray over them, and stuff like this. You got a quilt, and in 18 years, 18 years, 18 years, you'll be doing that. But yeah, so come to church, 9 a.m., if you could tune in online.
Yeah.
But if you can make it out, even if you're within like 50 miles, like there's no traffic out here. Jump in your car. It's great. Just jump in your car, show up, be here in person. We actually have a huge announcement too that you're not going to want to miss. It pertains to a big portion of what we do at Cross Church. big announcement. I'm not being hyperbolic. It is huge. So you're going to want to be here for that as well. So not trying to guilt you, but it did say in the scriptures, they were all gathered together under one roof in one accord. Then the Spirit fell. What if the missing piece to a Holy Spirit moment is you sleeping in? Can you believe that? So yeah, anyways, come to church.
Not a guilt trip.
No. The Holy Spirit's like, oh, let's go to Cross. Oh, no, Susan's not there.
Yeah. Or whatever. Yeah. So yeah, we'd love to see you on Sunday, but I know this one was a little short, but hey.
I wonder why.
Yeah. Well.
What made us go so fast?
Sometimes I feel like the topics we've been talking about were very deep.
They were, yeah.
Compared this one, to this one.
This one's a lot easier to handle. What? I don't want to eat that.
Yeah. You want to say bye? Hey, bye.
Say bye, everybody.
Hook you.
She's like, whatever. She's like.